The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. We're not going to waste too much time on housekeeping. Oh, shout out to super producer Max Williams. And shout out to you, Noel. I'm Ben. We're hanging with another Ben today. This is part two where we got to hang out with the creator of Badass of the Week.
That's right, Mr. Ben Thompson, a fellow Ben and fellow historical spelunker. Yeah,
I like
look it.
It
up. That's the word. It's not dirty like it sounds. I promise. It's like cave diving, I think. So we're going to do that. We're going to all join our history harnesses together and go diving into the world of Tai Jin, the kung fu werewolf of Shaolin.
Okay, let's pick up where we left off.
At some point, the child becomes into the possession of a Shaolin monk. Whether this monk is wandering the forest and finds the child, or whether some villager or woodsman comes upon the child and brings him to the monastery, at some point, this child is placed in the care of the Shaolin Temple for Fujian Province. And I like to call it the Fujian Shaolin Temple, even though the correct opinion currently is Fujian.
Yeah, but you came to the right place. No Absolutely. Pun left behind.
Perfect. Never. Yeah, I couldn't go through this without getting that joke out.
I think a lot of Western concept of the Shaolin monks comes from the Wu-Tang Clan and the movies that members of the Wu-Tang Clan were obsessed with. That the Shaolin monks, you know, practiced insane, you know, precise precision kung fu, you know, in this rural kind of like separated kind of isolated area. Is all of that accurate, or are we kind of like, you know, they're not exactly shooting fireballs at each other, but they were seriously disciplined, you know, practitioners of these martial arts, right?
Yeah, I mean, Tai Jin ain't nothing to fuck with, right? Like the Shaolin temples were, you know, there was the main Shaolin temple is called the Northern Shaolin Temple. That's up in Henan Province. That's up north. And this is Fujian Province. So we're talking kind of just across the Strait of Taiwan. So we're in the south. And there is, this is one of these things, right? We're talking 1870 and we don't have good data on this, right? For whatever reasons, there's not a lot of great, like the imperial Chinese government was very good at marking how many bales of hay were transported on this day and on this day, but they don't have like a great accounting of where all of the Kung Fu temples were, which is kind of frustrating when you're going through this as a historian trying to make any sense of these legends, right?
A lot of them are bureaucratic records, right? Or astronomical observations.
Yeah, very intense details on that stuff, but you know, even trying to research old battles, it's like there were 100,000 men on this side and 100,000 men on this side and 100,000 men died and this side won. And it's like, all right, hang on.
The following five pages are about the amounts of hay and wheat that they were delivered over the course of the following weeks. Right.
And you're reading that and you're like, 100,000 people didn't live in Europe at the time that this 100,000 people were killed. Like, can I get a little more detail?
let's focus on the important thing here, which is, of course, the hay. So it's weird because there is this anomalous approach to historical records, right? Maybe different things are prioritized or documented in a different way. That's one thing, Noel, you said that's really interesting too, about how it's easy to think this was ancient history. But again, history is so much closer than it appears in the rearview mirror. I'm saying all this to say, like, Ben, there's pretty much no chance that they would have known about Petrus, right?
No, the no villagers way. No chance that story would have gotten here. These two people are these two people are operating in silos. So even though it's several hundred years later, there's no chance that there was communication on that way. But there are reports of there being at least one Shaolin temple in the south. So Shaolin is kind of the martial arts one. There are a lot of Buddhist temples, a lot of Buddhist practitioners all over the country, but the Shaolin is a particular branch that does the Wu-Tang Clan martial arts, the Shaw Brothers 1970s, like punch a hole in your chest kind of stuff. The temple is going to be burned to the ground, and there's no evidence of where it was, and a lot of places down there are trying to claim lineage and descent from the Southern Shaolin Temple, but we don't know where it was or if it existed for sure. But a lot of people talk about it and mention it, and so I think I feel comfortable saying there probably was a Shaolin Temple in the South, although I don't know.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's always hard to kind of, but anyway.
But they're likely.
Yes, it's likely that there was one. So he is training at this, he's brought to this Shaolin temple where there are martial arts monks. And the temple, I believe it was probably pretty close to like Guangzhou, like, you know, we're talking straight to Taiwan, but there's this little coastal village nearby where people live. And the monks live a little bit away from them in their own kind of private area where they do prayers and they train martial arts as a way of kind of like, you know, very Buddhist, you know, training your mind and your body to be disciplined. This is where you see all of that flying sidekicks and fighting with a staff and all of this cool stuff that we love and has inspired every good action movie ever.
Right. And a shout out to Empty Hand Kung Fu, right? That's a different varieties of what they're practicing, which we have to understand would have been much more than just a cool flex back then, given that there were oftentimes strict laws about what sorts of weapons could be owned or about someone's place in society. Because of these specificities, you would have to be able to defend yourself without the advantage of some sort of implement, like a cavalry broadsword.
There you go.
We didn't know what those were for a while.
Yeah, we just did an episode on Abraham Lincoln and his not really popularized duel that involves swords, where he basically just used his reach to intimidate the other guy into giving up.
Really weird flex.
You know, it's funny. I just realized something. We're going to get to the further badassery in the story, but just occurred to me, this story is basically the plot of Beverly Hills Ninja, starring Chris Farley, only instead of a hirsute child, it's just a fat kid.
Yeah, it's Kung Fu Panda. It's all of these movies, right? It's just his parents. The only difference is his parents abandoned him rather than were killed dramatically by somebody that he has to slay at the end of this story. You know, that's the only thing we're missing.
I think in Beverly Hills Ninja, he is abandoned or he's in a basket, Moses style or something like that. Yeah. I literally watched this very recently. Does not hold up, by the way.
Unfortunately, a lot of those didn't. Yeah. It's a shame. Maybe we keep our memories with us.
I just think, unfortunately, and I mean, not to psychoanalyze Chris Farley, posthumously, but I'm sure he did get to a point where he was a little tired of doing the, hey, look at that fat guy falling down joke, as a fellow fat guy, right. I can speak to that. That would be a real bummer for that to be the core of your whole
shtick. To be typecast, to be fat cast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is like, this is something, that Taijin already is dealing with, according to the story, because he's been typecast as a demon.
Right.
And he doesn't,
minute one.
So do the monks think maybe he has some cool powers that he can harness, make him like our demon? Is there anything along those lines?
They're kind of like, the Buddhist monks are pretty chill, right? So they kind of all God's creatures attitude
That's
towards
great.
Everything, right?
I like
and so,
that.
So they raise him. And what the first thing they try to do is get him adopted out into the town. We found this child. Somebody's brought us this child. Different accounts say a monk found him versus he was brought into the monastery. But they want to find a good home for this kid. So, but nobody wants him, right? Because he's different and that's not cool. And so they can't adopt him out. And so he ends up getting raised by the monks in the temple, which is not common. They don't raise children there. You bring your kid to them when you're ready for him to enter holy orders and become a monk forever.
Right.
They don't usually get access to like them at age 3 to start training them. And the story goes that there are 10 masters at this school. And generally, when you come in as a Padawan or whatever you want to call it, you get a teacher and the teacher teaches you and he's your sensei for your entire career.
And so you're kind of following their style, right?
Right.
And there might be another master who has a different style.
Right.
And different followers or Padawans. And your styles will remain distinct.
Is that correct? That's how you get those different styles. You're like, oh, this is Tiger Crane style. Like there's a lot of that. But one thing with Taijin is that he's growing up and he doesn't want to go into town because regular people don't like him. They think he's weird or he's a demon or he's an animal or whatever other things, whatever problems they might have with a guy that is covered completely head to toe in fur. So he doesn't want to go into town and do anything. He doesn't want to get a job. He doesn't want to be a fisherman. He doesn't want to go down to the market or anything. So he stays at the temple for his whole life. And he just trains with these guys and all of the different masters, like, these 10 masters, they have their Padawans, but he's kind of all their kid. Right. So as he's growing up, they're all kind of part of his childhood. So they all and he's always kind of hanging around and, oh, hey, can you show me this? Can you show me this trick here?
And so it's his adoptive parents.
Yeah.
It's like instead of 3 men and a baby, it's like 10 kung fu masters and a werewolf.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So he basically gets all of the skills.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Private tutoring from 10 masters all day long, every day for his entire life. And he becomes the master of everything.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts of a spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Again, like, we're going off of very difficult to track sources here, but the idea is that he kind of becomes the Wikipedia of Chinese martial arts. He can do 200 open hand systems, 140 weapon systems, which I didn't even know there was such thing as 240 weapons. But
can he do the 5-point palm exploding heart technique?
Yes, he literally can. It's called Dip Mach. Yes. It's called the Death Touch. I called the I called it the Werewolf Death Touch in my Badass of the Week article, but but it's not actually called that.
And you know what? I learned this from your work, Ben. I learned that there was a real death touch. And then I remember, and this is a while back when I was reading this, I remember thinking something along the lines of what you just said. I was like, 140 different weapon systems. I was like, they can't all be amazing. You know what I mean? there have to be like a couple of also rans, you know, like
that poor gladiator with the trident and the net. And you're like, you poor bastard. Give me a sword and shield any day.
It's funny you're talking about that because, you know, as a fellow Dungeons and Dragons fan, you'll appreciate this. Went on a deep dive trying to learn whether tridents had ever actually been used as a normalized weapon of war. Because the gladiators were so big on just novelty and spectacle and impractical stuff, right?
Yeah.
Everybody, bare chest, except for my left shoulder, that's where the armor goes.
Yep.
It's okay. Cool looking. Look at it shine. It's nice.
Yeah. Well, the trident and net guy was a warrior of Poseidon. So because they're all doing the gladiator stuff for show, so they're all representing gods in different parts of the world and things. So he's a warrior of Poseidon. So the net and the trident are ocean things.
He super, super off. Inconvenient. Great for like going fishing, you know, not or super for, great for defending yourself against a lion.
For costume parties.
Right.
Great for Dragon Con.
Yes.
Great for Dragon Con.
But it goes to what you were saying earlier too, because you were like, you were talking about, you know, not having access to the good weapons, right? The peasantry of Fujian province didn't have access to the good swords and the good weapons and things. So, you know, in Japan, it was illegal to have a sword. In China, you could, but it was expensive. It was prohibitively expensive and to have a weapon like that.
We don't think about that.
And
yeah.
So,
because now we think of the countries that don't allow guns as like everyone's got knives and that's the best they can do.
Yeah. There was a time where
swords was technology. Yeah. And swords were technology, the height of it, the best ones, the sharpest steel that would hold that edge. That was a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to have something that can smelt that. You got to have some way of forging that. You got to have a guy that knows how to do that. Right. And your blacksmith in town is making nails and horseshoes, right? He's not making chainmail armor. And so, yeah. So, I mean, it's a lot of staff spear, that kind of stuff. But in an open hand fighting, like you said, because it's not like you don't need a sword. You need a sword at this time period more than you need, arguably more than you need weapons today, because there are like literally bandits and literal wolves and wild animals. There's bears that like, there's pirates. There's all kinds of crazy stuff that will like, you know, you are not immune in this time period in this part of the world from like bandits showing up and setting your village on fire, right?
Like, oh yeah. And so now this kid is becoming, we're in that action montage that
super
happens
training
in,
montage,
in,
yeah.
Yeah, toward the end of the first act, beginning his second act in our story. And now we see him, you know, now we see him doing like mantis style, switching to some tiger crane. Somebody throws something behind his back and he catches it without turning around. Right.
And then flash to he's no longer a wolf boy. He's a wolf man. And he is given serious responsibility because of the fact that he has mastered all of these techniques and is essentially like the best one.
Oh, you know? The montage stops with someone saying, there's no more we can teach him.
That's right.
It cuts to him, and then the fan blows the fur like dramatically in front of like a vista. Yeah.
But what happens then? I mean, he's at home in this monastery. Is that like when do the big bads come in that threaten their way of life, and then he has to step up and like, you know, lead the way, save the day?
So there's a couple of really good stories, and you know, the existence of this man is probable. These stories are almost certainly a little bit more legendary than than what we've already gotten into, right? Like I said, there is a photo. I've seen two photos that are purported to be of this guy. He's not wearing a Shaolin costume or anything in them. He's wearing like a suit. But you know, it's searchable. You can look up Taijin and see a photo of this person. And I'm pretty sure he existed for real. These stories are kind of when you're getting into, and like, I don't know how this hasn't been a like Wu-Tang Clan movie, but it should be, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I think we're kind of freestyling the script for it right now. So
let's do it.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We got the montage. Guys, we nailed that montage.
It was solid. Yeah.
I think RZA would approve. Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll do the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So there's a couple stories about this guy. He becomes the first grand master of this temple, and which might be the Southern Shaolin Temple. Like I said, I don't know about that. But but he becomes the grand master, the first one, because these 10 masters have all combined their knowledge into this one super, super guy. Okay. So this is where some of the really kind of out there stories come from. But I will tell them because they're cool. One of the stories that kind of illustrates how good Taijin became at fighting and understanding the world around him is that he was entering a class and there were 12 different monks there that were going to have this class with him. And he entered the classroom and then he pulls out a knife and he throws it up into the ceiling and some assassin like falls out of the rafters. And he's like, I heard 13 breaths when I entered the room, and I knew there must have been someone else here.
Which is also what a tough first day of class. Like, he just punked the hell out of all 12 of those folks. You know, how long were they in that room? Right.
Wait. But these weren't like, this wasn't a test. These were actual ninja assassins.
It was an actual assassin. In the story as told, it's an actual assassin. I like to think that he planted that guy there to intimidate his class for day one of being like, you know, like, the guy's an actor, you know.
So he got a plant and he just conveniently didn't tell him, hey, I'm going to kill you at the end.
Oh, that guy probably was fine. He probably just paid him $100. Oh, okay. Oh, God. Yeah, I don't think he actually killed the guy. I think the whole thing was a was an act. No.
Okay, but that's a crazy impressive. That's like, did it happen level impressive.
Yeah, almost certainly not. Almost certainly this didn't happen, right. But that's the story. Right. That's a story associated with him. And like I said, I'm going to get into a couple more of these. One of these stories says that he would, when he had run out of like viable sparring partners in the temple, he would go into the wilderness and like fight wild animals like wolves and bears and wrestle them to kind of train himself. And he'd like, you know, punch trees to tighten up his knuckles and you know, all of this kind of stuff that you read about.
That's all in the montage.
Right. Yeah.
All that's going in. That's
wrestling a bear.
Final countdown.
Yes.
Have you seen that movie RRR? It's like a big Indian kind of giant action set piece film.
It won an
Oscar for best song. It's fabulous, but there is a character who the first montage you see is him literally swinging through the jungle and like fighting tigers and bears for sport, kind of, you know, and it makes me think of the stuff you're describing here. It is an excellent film. Highly recommend it. Also, entirely mythology.
Yeah, this is the Jet Li movie, like, but one of the ones that he makes in Hong Kong for Chinese audiences. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like,
there we go. And check that stuff out while you're waiting for Ridiculous History Studios to come out with the Tai Jin story, which I see as the first of a cinematic universe.
Yeah, right.
It's the Kung Fu Werewolf franchise.
There it is. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you get like the Space Traveler one, and then you combine them in the third movie that's when we all go to, we were all astronauts.
We're going to make it tasteful, okay? We're going to, yes. It's going to make sense that he goes to space. It's all going to make sense in the plot. We're going to earn it. We're not just going to chuck him into space just because. No, it's going to be a cliffhanger on the previous thing, and there's villains, space ninjas coming.
Yeah.
And he's like, I must go.
We know the guy who did the catering on the Leprechaun franchise, so this is like high art.
Oh, yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
That's what we're shooting for, anyway.
But how did, okay, so Tai Jin, this is just, for a lot of these characters, these semi-apocryphal characters in the historical record, they often have one big story. You know what I mean? And this guy has several. It doesn't stop with this. Frankly, I don't want to overuse the term, but it doesn't stop with this badass killing of an assassin on the ceiling.
Right. So the one of the big stories involving him is that this coastal village of people that was near his temple was coming under attack from pirates. So there's a word for these people. They're called tohu. It's a type of, the Chinese use it to refer to Japanese pirates that are kind of raiding the coastline. And we don't know for sure if they're Japanese or whatever. They just kind of called anybody who was not Chinese, who was raiding the coastline, tohu. And but we do know that, like, across the Strait of Taiwan, Japan is moving into Taiwan. Okinawa is near-ish to the area. So it wouldn't be that weird for there to be Japanese pirate raids along the coast here. And if not, it could just be bandits or just regular old Chinese pirates. But this is a thing that happened in coastal villages in the late 19th century. And one of the stories says that Tai Jin and some led his monks into combat against Japanese pirates who had kind of stopped to plunder the village.
They went onto the high seas.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know if he fought them on the coast or if he got onto their boats. I love the idea of thinking that he got onto their boats and was fighting the boats. That's just amazing to me, right? Defending
piece,
the village,
you know?
That didn't want him. Nobody would adopt him, and he still
now
defends the village.
Well, again, he's bounding from boat to boat,
right,
taking people out as he goes.
Inexplicably now in deep relationships with sharks.
Just speak to them. That's another power that reveals itself
he's
in the third act.
Aquaman. Yeah,
yeah. He's ripping planks off the boats and they're sinking. You know, punching holes in the hulls.
Bullet time shots of him. It's like splintering wood. You know, sorry, we got to think about this cinematically.
Yeah, so we do actually have stories of Shaolin monks doing this kind of thing. So while we don't know for sure if this story is true, the only places this is mentioned is in very unreliable, very unreliable narrators. But there is a very real confirmed story of Shaolin monks fighting these coastal raiders. It's a little bit up north, and it's a couple of hundred years before this. But there was stories where the monks would come to the aid of villages that were in trouble. And in one particular of these stories, it was in 1550-something, 100 pirates had come ashore to plunder this town. And the monks showed up, and there were about 100 monks that showed up, and they fought these guys, and they beat down the pirates. And the pirates are running for it, and the Shaolin monks chase them for 10 days across 20 miles of swampland before, and they don't stop until they've killed every pirate that was involved in the raid. They lose 4 monks in the battle.
That's what people don't think of when they think of Buddhism.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
True.
So wait, there were only 4 monks?
Well, there were 100 monks. Only 4 monks die, but 100
only
Japanese
4 monks
pirates
took
die.
The loss.
Yeah. But yeah, like, wow. Warrior monks are crazy. You know, Japan has a huge culture of, like, warrior monks who resisted the emperor, you know, just fighting mm-hmm. with Naginatas and stuff like that. And, I mean, just really tough guys. And they lived up in these mountains, so you couldn't get up to them. And there was a temple of Buddhist monks in Japan that they were able to resist Nobunaga for like 30 days or something. He couldn't take their fort.
Wow.
It's really cool stuff.
This is making me think that it's quite possible the individual Taijin may have become sort of an historical repository for these true stories about many different people.
It that's seems that way. That's point, how I feel about it. And that's kind of why I don't have too much of a problem talking about them. Because I, like you said, I like to back up the stories and review the sources mm-hmm. and all of that. And something like this is kind of, it's such a cool story, but it's so like, it's kind of so out there and it's so hard to verify any of this stuff. I like it as an opportunity to talk about the history of werewolves and the history of sure. our friend Petrus and of this the skin condition and of Shaolin monks in general, warrior monk culture. Like it's cool stuff, kung fu, like everything.
Well, on our other podcast that Ben and I do with our buddy Matt called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, it's a critical thinking conspiracy podcast. A lot of times conspiracies and conspiracy theories are a way in to talk about a larger question, you know, whether it be existential or historical or like, what's at play here? Why do people think this? You know, and we're not here to tell you, yes, this conspiracy is true. Yes, we're debunking this or whatever, but it's just always a fun way in. So even if we take it with a grain of salt and are very transparent about that, it is a fun thought experiment and conversation. And speaking of that, with Taijin, what's all this about him burning down a temple?
Yes.
Like, that doesn't sound like good guy behavior.
No. Yeah.
That's our third act twist, I think.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry.
We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So this is the third act twist. Yeah, exactly. He's fighting off monks. And I do like this story of, like, you know, the 100 monks running. And I'm picturing them with bow staffs, right? Because they probably didn't have
to. Yeah, man.
Running down.
Crouching tiger style.
Yeah, just clubbing
Wai
pirates.
Fu, just flying through the air.
And exactly. You know what? Forget the historical accuracy. They are doing parkour.
They're very visibly...
Absolutely. Do it like Shaolin Spider-Man is what I want us to tell the cinematographer.
with
the bow staff. Yeah,
but so it's kind of what I was saying with those the Japanese monks who resisted Nobunaga. One problem with Buddhist monks in the eyes of the emperor is that the emperor of China and Japan and any other place, the shogun, the warlords, they don't want you to be paying attention to some worshiping some other god. The emperor is all that you need, right? Like, these guys have their own code. They have their own ideas. They think about this. They're not in the system, right? And so in a lot of ways, they're trouble. And so they can cause problems. Sometimes the emperors use them. There was a battle in like 600 when the Tang Dynasty was being formed, and he recruited Shaolin monks to like have battles in the mountains against his enemies. And he was like, oh, well, I'll give you I'll give you some concessions. You guys can kind of be autonomous and do your own thing, but you have to help me win the empire. And they did. And they go into battle and they beat up all of these bad guys but they beat up all of the enemies of the future Tang Emperor.
It reminds me a little bit in some ways of the relationship that the Templar Knights had with the ruling powers of their day, right? Where they were useful as special forces, essentially. But then if they became ideologically problematic, there wasn't really anything to stop the ruler from saying, these folks are verboten. You're out.
It's exactly
right?
That.
Do not pass go. Okay.
Yeah. So they're useful because you can predict what they're going to do because they have a code of conduct that they don't want to shake. So it's predictable.
That's right.
To know what they're going to do. So yeah, they're very good. Like, Shaolin monks have been used in battle by emperors or wannabe emperors. You don't want to put them in front of a cavalry charge, but if you've got to like fight some guys in some tough terrain in the mountains, or you want to ambush some people who aren't really ready for it, or have them hold a pass, like they're very effective at what they do, which is fight hand to hand.
We need monks.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We need like a crew of Shaolin monks.
Yeah,
just like on retainer.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I need one to go around a grocery store with me and kind of make sure the aisles are clear.
I okay. Points to Ben for the specificity on that one. I don't know what happened to you in aisle 9, man, but it really left a mark.
They're just always stocking the thing that I need, or it's always some slow person with a double cart trying to
and. If they're stalking, you have to do the thing with the forced conversation where you're like, oh, hey, you're so
I just need to stand here a second and look at this display because I don't actually know what I want yet. So I'm just going to stand over you for a minute. You know,
wouldn't like it be craft better? Singles too. You get in there. Yeah. All right.
I don't know if I need the extra pimento for the olives or what. Do I need black or green? I don't know. Wouldn't it be easier to just get Tai Jin to roundhouse, kick that dude in the head, and then you have plenty of time to stand there and make your decision?
Wow. The story's true villain has revealed itself, I would argue.
Solution oriented, though, I like it because it feels like something that's happened to a lot of us. Has nothing to do with Tai Jin, but you know, you've been in this situation where you're thinking, I don't really want a bunch of extra conversations. So while this really slow person is apparently having an existential crisis about this tomato sauce. I'm going to stand next to him and look like I'm interested in something. I know I'm not going to buy it.
I just don't think this would meet the code of the Shaolin monks. I just don't think this would fit the bill for them. They would probably have to be a pass for them.
They might. You know what? They might have follow-up questions. They might say like, well, which grocery store is it? Because we respect the code of Trader Joe's.
Yeah, exactly. But Publix is
Publix is fair game.
Yeah.
See, in that instance, I have to become the emperor of China here, because the emperor at this point, we're in the Qin dynasty, which is run by a group of people called the Manchus, who are up north. They're not ethnic Han Chinese. And so okay. The ethnic Han Chinese don't like them as much. And they're kind of cracking down a little bit on some of the Buddhism stuff, and the monks don't like it, and the monks speak out against the Qin dynasty. And ooh, if you are the emperor of the Qin dynasty, you got to get rid of these guys, right? They're a problem. You're useful until you're not useful to me, and now you're a problem. So the Qin dynasty sends troops to burn this monastery to the ground. And so Taijin is not the problem here. There's two guys that kind of run this monastery as with them, assuming it was run the same way as the regular Shaolin monastery up north, which is you have like a spiritual leader who kind of runs the whole show. And then Taijin is the combat instructor. He's the main fighting guy, but he's not the spiritual head of the thing. And so for whatever reason, politics get involved and the temple has a problem with the emperor, and the emperor decides that these guys got to go, and he sends an army. And there's a battle. The monks try to fight these guys off, but it's hard, right? I mean, they've got armor and swords and horses and all of these things. And so what ends up happening is the monastery kind of partly under Taijin's direction, they clear all their stuff out. They clear their people out. A group of monks stays to try to buy them time, some kind of a little last stand. Various sources argue on this. Like some say they stood and fought and only a handful survived, 13, sometimes say 5, some say 13. A small group of monks survived this battle. Others say that that everybody just left before the emperor got there. And in whatever happens in this battle, Taijin survives and the temple is burned to the ground. And we don't know. We've never found it. We don't really know where it is.
I love the idea of the preemptive torching. I think that's very, very clever.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't exactly make sense. They could have just taken their stuff and you know, hit the road. But it's a nice flourish when, like, you know, get these soldiers just ready to burn something to the ground. And they get there. Wait, what? It's already burning.
Oh, you can't fire me.
I got nothing to do. Yeah. Okay, I guess we'll go back home.
I mean, that's pretty metal.
It's very badass.
Yeah.
Very badass.
So let's recap. Infant born super hairy. They think it's a demon. They leave him in the forest. He's rescued by Shaolin monks. He learns from all of the great masters of this monastery, becomes the first true grand master, defends the village, fights a bear. And then at the end, he's the only grand master that this temple will ever have, because he burns the whole place to the ground on his way out the door.
Right? Epic. Epic. That's our log line. And this is, okay, so, and again, the late 1800s.
Right.
By this point,
there's a
right?
photograph of this guy.
Yeah. Like this.
That's how recent he is.
And so
it's wild.
So I remember that there is a bit of a denouement, as we would say here. He does survive all these trials and tribulations. According to the story, he lives well into old age. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, the story goes that he dies in 1928 at the age of 79. The monks kind of disperse and like continue their teachings, but not in like an organized fashion again. And so that's the story. Like I said, the sources on here are very unreliable and very bad. And a lot of it is, you know, has to be taken with a ton of salt.
Sure.
One of the things that I like to joke about is that they're the one of the Horde priest trainers in World of Warcraft is named Taijin, and she has a much longer WOWpedia entry than Taijin has Wikipedia entry. So
speaking of, here are other things that happened right around this time, the time of this guy's death, just to give us the historical context,
totally,
which Noel, I know you and I are both endlessly fascinated with. 1928 When he passes away at the age of 79, here are some things that are believed to be invented that year. The recliner, like the lazy boy, ice cube trays, bubble gum, clip-on ties, and the electric razor.
I mean, hell, my dad was born only 10 years later than this. Wow. You know, I mean, he was pretty old, but that's wild. And again, the details of the story, because of its isolation, really does read like an epic, you know, kind of fantasy kung fu
Crouching
film.
Tiger.
Yes, it really is, because it all feels separate from history in its own way. It's like in its own little bubble.
Yeah, and it's what you said about it feeling ancient, right? Because when you picture Shaolin kung fu monk fighting pirates, you're not picturing... So like 18, you know, let's say he was in his 30s when this happened. And I do think that there is a lot of what we were talking about before of like ascribing things that everything that every badass monk did to this guy, because like
is now this guy.
Yeah, it's like if he's in his 30s, right? So let's say we're looking at like 1880 when those pirates show up and he has to like defend the coastline against the pirates. The Japanese had bolt action rifles in 1880, you know, like we're not talking swords, you know. So like I don't know, I think it makes it harder to buy that this happened the way that it was written, but you know. But the Arisaka rifle was like introduced around that time period, right?
And we can't, you know, it's so tempting to compare apples and oranges. I will be honest with you guys. I never thought about it, but I find myself looking down on the inventor of the clip-on tie a little bit, because you lived in the same world as this guy, and what your contribution. Is that I can't talk, man.
No, you can't.
I fell asleep trying to put on a pair of pants. Dude, people are out here changing the world.
The clip-on tie is important to certain people. You know, I have to look up a YouTube video every time I tie a tie. So,
yeah.
But I would never be caught dead in a clip-on. I will look up that YouTube video.
Yeah. I'll tell you, though, I feel like I may be unfairly denigrating this well-meaning inventor who is just trying to save time.
For children. Let's just think of it as for children.
Okay, you're right. You're right. I'm being really rough on this one.
No, it's the thing that comes up for me a lot is that, like, you know, so I do Badass of the Week. I got the podcast. I got the website. I wrote all these books about Badass. And so people will sometimes get kind of their back up and be like, what's so badass about you? I'm like, dude, nothing.
Oh, really?
Nothing, man. Like, I can talk to you about it. Yeah, you let Julius Caesar go have his conquests. Yeah, you go have your conquests. I'll be Suetonius. I'll write the story when you get back. But like, there please don't hit me. Right? Like,
it's a little easier for us because people ask us what's so. They don't have to ask us what's so ridiculous about us because it's clear.
Yeah,
you know, we walk into a room.
Messed up that we can vote.
Yeah, it's true.
So this is where I think we begin to wrap the story a little bit, Ben, because people are going to have to learn more by going to the podcast Badass of the Week,
which exists wherever you get your fine podcast material. Really quickly, though, I wanted to point something out that you did mention in the article on the website, that this condition, this
hypertrichiosis,
that's the one, is typically life threatening.
Oh, that's right.
Right? And like this guy lived to the ripe old age of roughly 79, you know, based on what we know. And it's rare in the first place. So how much even more rare must it be to have the version of it that you can basically live? And even those days, that was a long life.
And he's fighting pirates and bears too, right? Like that's not great for your, and he's an enemy of the emperor. That's not great for longevity. But yeah, like we've got maybe 50 people, I think, over the course of like, you know, because this is a thing that is documented pretty well, because they'll be like, oh, dude, this guy had all, you know, and you run into some really bad stuff with this. I think, you know, like a lot of like sideshow kind of stuff from the 1880s,
totally.
you know, like the JoJo, the dog-faced boy. And you're like, oh, God, I don't even want to say that out loud. But it's worth mentioning in context with hypertrichosis, because that's how these people were viewed by the societies. And at the time, right? Like, and so he's
playing life on hard mode,
right? And it's cool that he was able to have so much success with it, which, you know, it's inspiring, right?
And couldn't be happier to have you join us this week on our little show, man. Again, as we said off air, big fans, and thank you so much, Ben. Where can people learn more, not just about the podcast, which, as we said, is available everywhere you find your favorite shows, but where can our fellow ridiculous historians learn more about your work, learn more about your books, and so on?
Okay, so the website is badassoftheweek.com. It's all one word, and it should pop up. And then all the books are on Amazon or whatever else. And
there you go. Easy. Well, thanks again for hanging with us, man. And look forward to hopefully having you back again. Or maybe we can, I don't know, continue this this ridiculous history love fest in the future.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. I'm a fan of your guys as well. I'm a longtime subscriber. So
shucks.
It was really a good opportunity for me to be on here. So I'm very happy about it.
Did you hear that? Oh, we're coming up in the world.
Hey.
Maybe it's time to buy some clip-on ties.
No, never.
Agreed. Agreed.
We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills, into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.